please give a warm welcome to one of the finest public servants in America, Rick Santorum.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for that very, very kind welcome. And Ralph, thank you for your very generous introduction. And Steve, thank you for your invitation to come here tonight. I've given two talks in Des Moines in the last 6 months, and they've been both here. So this must be the place to reach out to the folks in Iowa. It's a real honor for me to be here because, as every other speaker has said, this is a critical time in our country's history. You know, a lot of times in our history, you sort of put one foot after another and you sort of go on with your life, and you don't realize as you go on through your life that what the time that you're living in is significant. But I think everybody in this room, and I think everybody in this country, recognizes this is a special time in America. This is a turning point in America. And what a blessed thing it is to be here at such a time. I feel very blessed. I feel very blessed to have served in the United States Senate and the House. I feel blessed to be here tonight to talk to you. I have to say something. It wasn't what I was planning on talking about, but I have to do a little aside because I understand that there have been some robocalls being made to people talking about my pro-life convictions and that I was a, quote, pro-life fraud. I'd like to address that issue really with the best way I can, which is to tell you a little story about my pro-life activities. At some point, you could actually say that even though I have, for 4 years in the House and 12 years in the Senate, had a 100% perfect pro-life voting record, to some degree, I think that the comment of being a pro-life fraud could have applied to me, as it does, unfortunately, to many pro-life legislators and leaders in our country. There are a lot of people who vote pro-life. There are very few people who stand up and fight for life. And there's a reason for that. You pay a price. You pay a price if you stand up out of the foxhole and fight for life, not just vote for life. I remember after one of the partial birth abortion debates, Zell Miller, great senator from Georgia, who, by the way, came to the United States Senate not as a pro-life senator, but left as one and worked with me on partial birth abortion. He said, when it came to people speaking on the issue of life, he said, silence is not golden, it's yellow. And indeed, I went through that myself. For the first 4 years I was in the House of Representatives and the first year I was in the Senate, as Ralph described, I was the unlikely congressman and the unlikely senator. I won a race. I was outspent 4-1 in a Democratic district that was 60% Democrat, and our candidate for governor, who was the only other person on the ballot in my district, got 31%. And I won against a seven-term incumbent who had never gotten less than 60. Now, some people would consider that a miracle. And then I won again in a redistrict. They blew my district apart and redistricted in 92. I ran against a 20-year incumbent, won again. And then I decided to take on an incumbent senator, as Ralph described. But during that time, I was running. I was a busy man. I was an ambitious man. I was a pro-lifer, but I dared not talk about it. I never said the word abortion on the floor of the House of Representatives, not once in the 4 years I was there. And in the first year I was in the United States Senate, I felt the same way. There's one thing about representing a state like Pennsylvania. It's a tough state. You know, you have to win in a state like that, you gotta be very smart politically. I was told over and over again, you gotta know what battles you have to pick. And you can only pick certain ones. And certainly, don't pick the pro-life issue. Don't pick that issue. And I was content to do that. Vote pro-life, work behind the scenes, try to get some votes. Well, my life changed in 1995. I got elected to the United States Senate, and I stopped being a busy man running for the next thing, trying to reach for the next opportunity. And my wife and I now had two children that we began to school at home. We had a third one on the way. And a friend of mine, Don Nichols from Oklahoma, came up to me one day and he said, "Rick, how would you like to go to a Bible study?" Now, I'd been asked that before, but I was too busy. And so I said, "You know, I'll do that." I met a wonderful chaplain of the Senate by the name of Lloyd Ogilvie. He was a great spiritual leader. I found a great church with my family and a wonderful leader of that church who inspired both Karen and I in our faith walk. And as I grew, I recognized the blind spots as a husband, as a father, as a leader. Well, it just so happened in late 1995, there was a bill up on the floor of the United States Senate authored by a guy named Bob Smith from New Hampshire. It's called the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. And I looked at that bill and I was watching him on television. I said, "That can't be true. That you can't deliver a baby all but the head that's halfway through gestation and execute the baby while you're in the doctor's hand. You can't do that. That can't be real." It was real. But I didn't have the courage to get up and do anything about it. It was only after 1996 and that faith walk that I was on, that journey that my wife was so important in, that my children, my pastor was so important in, that I began to realize what the miracles were all about. And as a result of that journey, when September of 1996 rolled around, we had passed the bill in December of 95, but President Clinton had vetoed it. And by September 1996, we decided to try to override President Clinton's veto. And believe it or not, the manager of the bill at that time was Rick Santorum. I had not said a coherent sentence in my entire congressional career on the issue of abortion. And there I was, hour after hour, leading this abortion battle. Now, I will tell you some things that happened during that will give you some insight as to the blessing that God will give you if you follow his call. One was Senator Dianne Feinstein, who got up and talked about women. One of the things that the partial birth abortion advocates said, that we had to keep this procedure legal because pregnancies would go awry late in pregnancy. And we'd have to terminate the pregnancy because the baby that the mother was expecting, well, wasn't perfect anymore. And so this option had to be available. And so she said, for example, there were fetal abnormalities that were not easy to spot early on in pregnancies, like brains forming outside the skull or stomachs and intestines outside the body. And I got up and I said, "Think about the message that we're sending to the less than perfect children of America and the mothers who are right now dealing with the possibility of delivering an abnormal baby. My wife, Karen, is due in March. We haven't done a sonogram. We're hopeful that everything is fine, but what message does it send to me in looking at that sonogram in a week or two if that child isn't exactly what I wanted?" Well, we had that sonogram in a week or two. And the sonographer looked over at us and said, "Your child has a fatal defect and is going to die." Now, I got to tell you, after having spent a year walking with the Lord, getting closer, being a better father, being a better husband, standing up and fighting on the floor of the United States Senate, the answer that I thought I got from God was he was going to take my son. I remember very clearly they went to see the doctor to see if there was anything they can do. And they did an examination. They brought me into this little cubbyhole room, little conference room. And they closed the door. And he said, "Now, I have to give you your options." He said, "The first option," he says, "I understand your position, but the first option is you could have an abortion." The very moment he said abortion, the lights in the room went out and the room went completely dark. and nervous laughter, I said, "I guess that answers your question." We didn't have an abortion. We didn't give him a death sentence. We gave him a name, Gabriel. And we fought for his life, but we failed. He was born premature as a result of an infection in utero. He lived 2 hours. I got to hold him for 2 hours. I got to love him for 2 hours. How many lives know only love? I was an angry man. I was a pro-life man and an angry man. And Lloyd Ogilvie and so many others said, "Rick, just pray for understanding. God will give you the gift of understanding." So I prayed and I prayed. And my wife, she prayed, but she did more than that. She wrote and wrote and wrote. She always kept a diary for our children, the sonogram pictures, little notes about what happened at her appointments, just to let our children know how much they were loved from the moment we knew about them. And so she wrote to Gabriel over and over, late at night, as she went through this. At the end, she shared those letters with her mother. And eventually they were published in a little book called Letters to Gabriel. That book sold 25,000 copies and saved hundreds and hundreds of lives, maybe thousands. The last time I was here, a woman came up to me and said, "You helped me so much. Your mother, your wife helped me so much in dealing and coping with grief." I had a woman yesterday, 2 days ago when I was at, that was yesterday when I was going into Fox to do Greta's show. I passed her in the elevator. And she said, "You're Senator Santorum?" I said, "Yes." She goes, "Thank you for your wife's book. It changed my life." God will be faithful if you are faithful. Let me tell you one other faithful story from that time. It was during the debate as Karen was carrying that child. And she wrote this at the end of her book. During the partial birth, this is quoting her book, during the partial birth abortion debate, a senator was thanking the women who had had partial birth abortions for coming forward with their stories. This is Barbara Boxer, by the way. She said, "They are crying. They're crying because they don't understand how senators could take away an option. They're crying because they don't believe that those senators truly understand what this meant for their families." Again, this is a letter to my son, Gabriel. "Daddy said in response, quote, 'The senator said she hears the cries of women outside this chamber. We would be deafened by the cries of children who are not here to cry because of this procedure.'" The Washington Post described what happened next. This is quoting the Washington Post. "Republican Senator Rick Santorum turned to face the opposition and in a high pleading voice cried out, 'Where do we draw the line? Some people have likened this procedure to an appendectomy. That's not an appendix,' he shouted, pointing to a drawing of a fetus. 'This is not a blob of tissue, it's a baby. It's a baby.'" Washington Post. And then impossibly, in an already hushed gallery, in one of those moments when the floor of the Senate looks like a stage set with its small wooden desk somehow too small for the matters at hand, the cry of a baby pierced the room, echoing across the chamber from an outside hallway. No one mentioned the cry, but for a few seconds, no one spoke at all. My wife concluded her book by saying, "A coincidence, perhaps. A visitor's baby was crying just as the door to the floor of the Senate was opened, then closed. Or maybe it was the cry from the son whose voice we never heard, but whose life has changed us forever." God will be faithful. I'm used to being attacked for being pro-life. In fact, after I started to do the things that I've just talked about, all the newspapers in my state started to refer to me, to the point that my children actually thought my first name was Ultra, because it was the ultra-conservative senator from Pennsylvania. That's what happens when you stand up. So I'm used to it. And I understand how people who are on the other side of this issue, so many of them wounded by the tragedy of abortion, so many of them in pain, that we cannot be angry with them. We need to pray for them. We need to love them. We need to support them. And those on the other side who attack, who say, I'm not pro-life enough, I appreciate their zealotry. I love their commitment. And I will not criticize them for holding anybody to the highest standard. And look, I make mistakes. In 2004, as you heard in the robocall, I endorsed Senator Arlen Specter for re-election. That was against the advice of my wife. You would think after 20 years, I would know better. But I was wrong in retrospect. Now, the odd thing is, I actually did it for the pro-life cause. I had lots of reasons not to support Arlen Specter. Trust me, it wasn't just the abortion issue. But the reason I did was because he gave us a promise as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, as we had a one-vote majority in the Senate, to support two Supreme Court picks that the president was going to have after 2004, Justice Roberts and Justice Alito. Good intentions, not always a good result. Now let's go and talk. Steve said, look, I want you to get up here and encourage people. Well, I don't know if I've encouraged you or not, but I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you that God has called you here. That's why you're here. You're not here for any other reason, that you have been called to be here. You've been called to serve. Now, I know a lot of you serve in a lot of different capacities. There's campaign workers. There's people who work in the pro-life cause here in Iowa, the epicenter of the marriage movement in this country. I understand. I understand how difficult it is. I understand that, particularly with marriage, that you've confronted some difficult times. We're going through the same thing in Pennsylvania. We didn't have the court impose marriage on us, but we've tried to pass a constitutional amendment in Pennsylvania, and we have the same laws with respect to constitutional amendments as Iowa does. And we've had a hard time getting it passed. And I know it is frustrating. And I know there's a lot of other frustration out there as you come here tonight. Ralph talked about the litany of things that are going on. What's the takeover of our economy with crony capitalism, European-style socialism. There was a survey done in America, and they asked Americans, how do you succeed in America? And what most Americans say is hard work, good ideas, thrift, all the merit, all the things that you would think when you think of success in America. Americans said, yep, it's a meritocracy. You ask that question in Europe, you ask that question in Italy or the Netherlands, first thing they say, who do you know in the government? What's your family's name? What connections do you have? That's why European socialism is failing, because people don't believe in the opportunity society. They don't believe in a meritocracy. And this is what they're trying to graft onto America. The same is true with our threats overseas and the problems that we're having. In having an administration who, instead of, even Bush, I think, was wrong in calling it a war on terror. We're not fighting terrorists. We're fighting people who have a theology to destroy Western civilization. Terror is not an ideology. It's a tactic. You can't be at war against a tactic. War against a group of people who have expressly vowed to destroy the United States of America, destroy, let's, Christendom. We don't like to say that. We get real weak in the knees. In fact, so weak that President Obama doesn't even call it terrorism, he calls it man-made disasters. We need to be honest with the American public at what we want to confront, or we're going to end up confronting a lot more than what we are today. And then, of course, there's the attack on faith and family, and you see it here with marriage. We see it in other states that have tried to deal with the marriage issue, and how anybody that stands up and opposes the redefinition of marriage is considered a bigot. Someone who speaks from the pulpit is considered hate speech. This is what we face, really an attack on religious liberty in this issue. And we have to be aware that that's exactly what is going on. And the attack on the family from the popular culture, pounding away with sex and violence incessantly, corrupting the minds through video games and iPods and just incessant corrupting. And then, of course, our educational system, where the government thinks that it's their duty to educate your children instead of understanding that it's your duty and their job is to help you do your duty of educating your own child. And then, of course, we have the higher education system. 60% of children who go into higher education leave, who have faith, leave without their faith. The assault is overwhelming. I can understand how you sit here and say, how can we deal with all this? We're at a critical juncture in every aspect of our lives. And what I say to that is, thanks be to God that you're here. Thanks be to God that it's my watch that America needs people like us. Thanks be to God. I think of the time of the Israelites in the Old Testament. How many times did they stray? How many times did they just walk away from God? And it took great leaders to come. I always think of the prophet Isaiah, who heard from God. Whom shall I send? Who will go on my behalf? And so God asks that all of you today. Whom shall I send? Who will fight for me? Well, let me tell you, you'll go out and fight. You're fighting the marriage issue, and I understand you failed. I tried it. I authored and fought for the Defense of Marriage, not the Defense of Marriage Act, the Federal Marriage Amendment. I carried it to the floor. I was the leader that forced the vote twice on the floor of the United States Senate, when I can tell you most of my colleagues, even the ones who voted for it, didn't want us to vote on it. And we lost, not once, but twice. And I talked about partial birth abortion earlier. Great success? Not really. We lost in 1996. We lost again in 1998. It was found unconstitutional in 2000. And it wasn't until 2003, after eight years, that we were able to be successful. And here's what I learned. Thank God we failed. What? Thank God we failed. You see, had Bill Clinton not vetoed that bill in 1995, no one in this room would have ever heard of a partial birth abortion. It would have been signed, and no one would have known any better. But he vetoed it, and we lost. And the New York Times had to report what a partial birth abortion was. Had to show pictures of little babies in the hands of a physician and that baby being executed. The people who were the abortion providers had to go on Nightline and say, yes, abortion is the killing of a baby. Now, that's no surprise to anybody here, but they had never said that before. And so we lost. In our plans, it was a disaster. But of course, God has other plans. And through our failure, for the first time since Roe versus Wade, attitudes on abortion changed in America. For the first time. Why? Because it became clear what abortion was taking the life of a child. I'll close with hopefully encouragement. Because you're going to be facing lots of battles. You're going to be out there fighting, whether it's at the crisis pregnancy centers or standing in front of abortion clinics, or fighting on the marriage amendment, or working for state legislative candidates, and you're not going to win them all. In fact, as you know, you probably end up losing more than you win when you talk about fighting in this culture. But let me assure you, if you are faithful, you will make a difference, and God will bless what you do. Let me give you an example of that that happened to me in 1998 as I close. I was on the floor of the United States Senate again for 6 hours debating Barbara Boxer. I should win some sort of special commendation for that. 6 hours, 8 o'clock at night, we finished. The vote was the next morning. And there's just something inside. You know this, you felt this, saying, I gotta do more. Feeling called to do more. So I went back to the cloakroom and I called my wife. We just had our little girl, Sarah Maria, after Gabriel passed away in October. We had another baby the following December. And this was September of 1998, so she was not even a year old. And I called and she was crying, and we had 3 other children under the age of 7. So she was a busy mom and was home alone all day. And I called and said, you know, I feel like I need to stay a little longer and talk some more. And she said what she always says, if that's what you feel called to do, then I'm there for you. So I went back out on the floor and I began to talk. I said I'd only be a few minutes. You get the sense of these things. I went for an hour and a half. Don't be afraid. Not that I couldn't, but I won't. An hour and a half, and I finished. And I felt the sense that maybe we were 3 votes short. Maybe one of these senators, because everybody was gone, maybe one of these senators or two were watching me on C-SPAN, and somehow that I touched them with these stories of these little children who the world wanted to abort, but whose parents fought for their lives. Yes, they had to fight for their lives to be born because they were not perfect in the eyes of medicine. And so I told story after story. The next morning we had the votes. We lost by 3 votes. And when I finished, everybody filed out. I sat there in my chair. And I thought, you prideful person, you. How dare you think that what you could do, you could make a difference. And so what did you do? You stood like a peacock in front of C-SPAN cameras for an hour and a half while your wife put the children to bed, tucked everybody in, and you came home and they were asleep. And when you left, they were still asleep. You were a lousy dad. You were a lousy father. husband. And so I sat there, and I wallowed. And I sort of had a funk for the next few days. And then Tuesday, I got an email. It was from a young man from Michigan State University, and it read as follows. Recently, while my girlfriend and I were flipping through the channels late at night, we came across C-SPAN and were fortunate enough to hear your speech regarding the evils of partial birth abortion. We saw the pictures of a little boy with the headphones on who was lucky enough to have parents who loved him enough to bring him into the world instead of ending his life. Both of us were moved to tears by your speech, and my girlfriend confessed to me that she had scheduled an appointment for an abortion the following week. She never told me about her pregnancy because she knew that I would object to any decision to kill our child. But after watching your emotional speech, she looked at me as tears rolled down her cheeks, and she told me that she could not go through with them. We're not ready to be parents, but I'm grateful that our child will live. It's a true tragedy that the partial birth abortion ban failed to override President Clinton's veto. But please take some comfort in knowing that at least one life was saved because of your speech. You saved the life of our child. One of my favorite quotes in the world is from Mother Teresa, who says that God does not call on us to be successful. He calls on us to be faithful. We are at a critical time in our country's history. We need to be faithful to God and to America, to our founder's vision. The philosopher Christopher Lash said, "Every day we get up and we tell ourselves lies so we can live. Every day we get up and we think about 1.3 million abortions and say, there's really nothing I can do. It's beyond me. We think of the institution of marriage being destroyed and children, generations of children, not knowing what it means to have a mother and a father. And you say, it's too big for me. We lie to ourselves so we can go on with our lives and go to the grocery store and live. But that's not why you're here. That's not why you answered this call. You came here because you're different. You came here because you're not going to lie to yourself. You're going to stand up and fight for the things that you know will make this country again the greatest country in the history of the world. You will, when called, as Isaiah was, whom shall I send? You will stand up and say, here I am, Lord, send me. God bless you.